All right, so first I would say, I know well what you're talking about. I am a religious, you know, over 52 years, a Sister of Charity of Halifax. I think the issue is, first of all, for us to recognize that in religious communities, as in dioceses, terrible things have happened. And precisely because we are connected, we are a communion and a communio, we're now all paying the price for this. This, by the way, does not in parishes or in a religious community create an environment of wanting to be supportive and involved, particularly in the restoration of response to offenders. But I want religious to recognize two things. First, that in our own history of religious life, we have unfortunately succumbed to hierarchy, special status, obedience to rules and regulations rather than conscience, and our own form of clericalism through our fault, through our fault, through our most grievous fault. We have. I know religious superiors who have been more imperious and imperial than many bishops I know. So this is one of, as my good Irish mother would have said, when I'm pointing one finger to you, I'm pointing a whole bunch right back at me. So let's just as Francis admits I am a sinner, we've got to admit that. But then what I want to do desperately, what is the genius of religious life? Who are we as men and women called to religious life? This is a prophetic vocation. I mean, the part of our problem, our capitulation to getting inside all of these pathologies is precisely we forgot. We're not inside the important and the visible. That's not where we are. We stand at the edge of the formal church and the world in which we are to witness to Jesus Christ. And the prophet, I mean, it's to recall that the prophet, the prophetic, does in fact, and we've had a number of amazing religious who've written about this, and of course, Walter Brueggemann's work has enlightened many of us in the church. The prophet's job is to stand up and show, it's not predicting the future, which is what people, it's to show the people, this is what God called you to be. Look at yourselves. What have you become? What God, what love, what power of the Holy Spirit do you manifest in your lives? So I think, even with our diminishment, look at all the prophets, the first thing when God asks them, I can't do that. Get my brother, he's smarter. He's not as old as I am. Get somebody else. I think we have to absolutely believe and retrieve the prophetic. And I'll say to you, if religious men and women, and especially religious women, but especially religious women, if we cannot use the enormous gifts of education and training and competence and confidence to speak. Look, anybody who's ever been at the difference between a priest clergy study day in a diocese, and I've done many on end of life and this issue, and a meeting of religious women, it is like night and day are not enough of a contrast. You've got the nuns all in tables, all around, everything is linked with, there's input, then there's sharing, then there's listening, then mix it up, don't sit with the people that you know. You go to a clergy study day, you raise a question, it's like pulling teeth. Our priests and bishops themselves, in my experience, are profoundly tired. Non-offending clergy are desperate. I mean, I still remember going to Newfoundland and the first time a priest said, I can't wear my collar anymore. I never wear my collar when I go to an airport because I've seen a clergy, priest, Roman Catholic with the collar, sit in an airport waiting area. I remember this was in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and I don't even know who the bishop was, and it wasn't the Bishop of Winnipeg at the time, years ago. And a mother and two kids, like 8 and 12, went and sat down, and then she looked like this, and she got up and moved. So we absolutely positively need to recognize we have been given ways of speaking that will help us continue to break the silence. Because the more we have clergy, and many, there are many lay people. Sister Noel, what are you talking about this week? What's your lecture? Abuse, why don't you just stop talking about it? As if it would go away, as if, think of misdiagnosis. If you ignore something that is profoundly pathological, that you're going to return to health. Not possible. Not possible. So I think that we have enormous gifts that we can contribute, even in our aging, even in our diminishment. And I think we have to bring this to breaking the silence. Because not only are our clergy tired, and in many dioceses never speak to the issue of abuse except about policies, never speak to these deeper issues. Most of them can't speak to these issues. They have an inability to deal with deep personal hurt, these deeper spiritual issues. And if you compound that by the fact that with our priest shortage in Canada, we have large numbers in many dioceses, more than half of the clergy has been educated and trained outside Canada. Many of these are wonderful men, but if you come from a culture that still has not recognized child physical and sexual abuse as a crime and a major social issue, I mean, you're going to be completely overwhelmed. It was as recently as 8 years ago in a diocese, giving a clergy study day, did an introduction to the issue, and this young priest, he identified himself as Filipino. Young fella. I mean, the Canadian priests were all old, very young, very keen. He raised his hand and he said, "Sister Newell, I want to thank you for giving us the history of the child abuse issue in Canada, because where I come from in the Philippines, we don't have this problem." And of course, what we're seeing, look at India, look at Africa, where the missionaries are. We now know this is not a licentiousness of the sexual revolution of Western societies. Western culture is giving us a problem in dealing with this, but this is rooted in the church culture.